Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like now to welcome Sherry Taylor. She's Executive Director of Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families here in Santa Fe. Carol Horwitz is Domestic and Sexual Violence Liaison for the City of Santa Fe, and Angela Daffron is a community advocate. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Welcome.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
It's great
morning.
To have you.
Good morning.
So, this is January, Stalking Awareness Month. Stalking is a horrible problem for those who have experienced it and pretty much unknown to those who haven't. Carol, would you like to start and tell us what stalking even is?
Okay, I can do that. The thing about stalking is that it is individual incidents that may not seem particularly awful or dangerous. Maybe someone leaves flowers on your windshield, or they show up at the grocery store where you shop every single day. But what stalking is a combination of these kinds of incidents. They happen over a period of time, and depending on who the stalker is and who the victim is, it can be actually literally be a form of terrorism, where victims may not, to an outsider, it may not look like anything, oh, well, they're just driving by their house. But to someone who's a victim of stalking, they know what the meaning of that driving by is, what the meaning of them showing up at their workplace, at their grocery store, at their child care center. And what that meaning is that I can find you anywhere, anytime, and you cannot run and you cannot hide. And I think that both Angela and Sherry have things that they would want to add to that.
Running a domestic violence program, one of the things that we see is that it's an extreme amount of people who try to leave domestic violence situations are stalked. They're stalked in many, many ways. They're stalked. There's an awful lot of information on cyber stalking these days, and it can be on your cell phone, it can be on your computer. You can actually purchase for less than $200 a program to go into someone from your computer to someone else's that attaches itself as a cookie, and you know everything they're doing on their computer all the time.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
I mean, that has to be illegal.
No.
It's legal for me to go into your and find out what you're doing on your email and what websites you're visiting?
The program is not illegal. The process may be. Only if someone knows it's there, and it's almost unidentifiable. We went to a training, Carol and I did I think it's been about 4 months ago. It was with the Coalition Against Domestic Violence for New Mexico. And it was very interesting how much someone can stalk you with technology in these days and age, day and age. I don't know.
The iPhones even now have a program on it that people will request their friends to open up, and the person that is receiving the request has to open it up and okay it. But you look at dating relationships and things like that, you know, and somebody that you might be dating today might turn into a stalker tomorrow, and you've opened up through the iPhone them to be able to see where you're at any moment from their phone.
Now, iPhone and texting and email stalking are annoying and maybe a little scary, but they're not in themselves dangerous, are they?
It's like Carol said, it's more, it doesn't appear to be dangerous, but it leads to different things, and it's more a reminder to re-victimize the victim continually that I'm still there, I can still find you, I still have control over you, because it is about control.
Why don't you, Angela, tell us your story right now?
2 years ago, a close family friend of mine was murdered in Kansas by her alleged stalker. I have to still say alleged because he has not been tried and convicted yet. The trial should start at the end of this month. She was not aware, to the best of our knowledge, that she was being stalked, but court documents do show that she was 19. He'd been looking in her windows since she was 9.
Oh, my
heavens.
So it was a small town, 12,000 people. She went missing in the middle of the day, in the middle of the afternoon, from a dead-end street that she lived on.
So she wasn't aware at all of this?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
How did the people around her piece together what happened?
The man that stands accused has been accused of stalking other women that were on the same dance team that she was on. And when she went missing, it's a small town, so a lot of people came forward and said, we saw this man following her home from dance practice. They pieced it together. They had him in custody by that evening. She went missing about noon on a Friday afternoon. They had him in custody till that evening. Kept him because he'd been released earlier that week on charges of impersonating a police officer when he complained of chest pains. And they did not find Jody's body until Tuesday.
And were they able to link him with her? I mean, I know the trial hasn't happened yet and all of that, but...
I can speak about what has happened in court testimony so far. There has been testimony that has placed him driving her out of town into the in the car. There has been testimony that he was crouched beside her car at the place that her body was found, and that he and her were turning into the county lake, fishing lake, where the car was found.
So that the story brings up a number of questions, and one is, when you see somebody following a friend of yours home from dance practice or anything else, on the one hand, you don't want to overreact. On the other hand, you want to prevent a situation like that. What's the right thing to do for friends and family?
I think you always have to be aware of your own surrounding as well as those that you care about. And that awareness, I think, gets a little bit naive in a small town where you've grown up and everybody knows everybody and everybody knew this guy too. He was so-and-so's son, you know. I mean, I think people get a little bit more lax when they think that the people that they know and the people that they've lived next door to for their entire lives maybe aren't capable of what some of the people still are capable of. So I just think you have to be aware of your surroundings, know what's going on around you, and go with your gut. If you get a bad feeling about something, it's usually correct. You know, pay more attention. You know, there's some good information on the Stalking Resource Center's website, ncvc.org, that... you know, give some more tips about what to do if you are being stalked and how to recognize those signs as well.
Sherry, you were talking about a different scenario, which is a domestic violence situation where you have, let's keep the most typical scenario, a man and a woman living together. The woman is the domestic violence victim. She decides she wants to get out of the situation. She moves out. The man starts stalking her.
Sometimes it starts even before they leave. If the offender is aware that someone's leaving, that their partner's leaving, oftentimes they will start kind of showing up in different places. And you're not expecting them to show up in different places. But oftentimes, victims of domestic violence have been stalked through the whole relationship. There are phone calls to work. They're like, where have you been? You're not allowed. You have very little control over your space usually if you're in some type of domestic violence situation. But the biggest one is calls for work. It causes people to lose their jobs. But it's a form of stalking.
I mean, so calls that the person calls so often that the boss says you're taking too many personal phone calls and they lose their job?
Absolutely. And a lot of times they'll be sitting in the parking lot. And that makes customers uncomfortable. That makes your employers uncomfortable. Domestic violence and stalking walk very closely in hand. And usually the most lethal time for someone leaving a domestic violence situation is when they leave, because that person no longer has control over them. So stalking is much more prevalent during that time. But usually during most of the relationship, there is stalking happening whether you know it or not.
So control is the operative word.
Control, domestic violence is all about power and control over one human being from another one. And it comes in all different forms. It comes in verbal abuse, financial abuse, sexual abuse. Physical abuse is the one that's most identifiable with law enforcement and with your friends. And because it's domestic violence, it happens in the home. It happens when no one else is looking. And so there's no one to see what's going on. And so the physical violence is what we as bystanders would see. We might hear the verbal. but we wouldn't know anything about the emotional or the financial or the sexual or all those other power control issues that go along with it.
And those are not necessarily crimes.
That's the bad thing.
Yeah.
Say more about that.
Well, if I call you a name, that's not a crime. If I say mean things to you, that's not a crime. If I say mean things to you all day, every day, 24/7, you may be extremely victimized, but that's not a crime. So, but the minute I threaten to hit you or hurt you or choke you, or suddenly it becomes it's a criminal issue. So,
what about the financial stuff? What are some of the financial abuse things that happen in a kind of stalking pattern?
A lot of times, checking accounts and savings accounts will be closed down. Sometimes any of us can monitor our finances on the computer, so that would definitely be something access could be taken away to the way you pay your bills. A lot of times, too, if you're ordered to pay child support, you just don't do it.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting about cyber stalking is that good stalkers can get a lot of information on your finances through a computer program, through their computer research. So stalkers can learn. Well, I've been reading about it a lot, and one of the things I found very interesting is it's sort of like the worm and the apple tree. You know, they have nothing to do all day but look for the very, very best apple. And a lot of times stalkers, because they're obsessive, they don't do anything but think about their victim. And in that time, they can learn an enormous amount. They can learn about their bank accounts. If they're not intimate partners, they can learn. I mean, if they're intimate partners, they may have
probably already know.
Yeah, but if they're not intimate partners, they can learn about. They can get their motor vehicle records. They can get their dog vaccination records. I mean, there's just these incredible amount of information that's out there that they can get access to and use.
Right. And there is probably a kind of detective-like thrill to being able to learn how to do that and succeed in doing it.
Unfortunately,
you feel like you're one of the. I mean, I watch probably a little too much of the show Law and Order, and there is that kind of thing that happens. And both the detectives and the bad guys know how to do the same things.
Yeah.
It's amazing when someone starts obsessing, when the stalking starts, or whenever something clicks in your head that shouldn't be there, that the things you can think of to do that would control another person's life or that would invade their space. I know of a particular incident where a victim of domestic violence left. There had never been any physical abuse, but there had been a lot of mental and power and control issues and financial and all kinds of different things, isolation from family, all the things that go along with it. And it seemed that everything was okay, and every morning there would be a phone call on a complete agenda of what had happened the day before in your life.
Oh, boy.
And that is extremely, it makes you aware that you have no safe place to be. I mean, it could be that you're at a board meeting. It could mean that you went out for a drink. You could be at a movie. You could be what show you're watching on TV. So these are the things that terrify people when someone's stalking.
And I think it's important to realize, too, that we think of stalkers, and it does go with domestic violence hand in hand quite often, and a lot of times the stalkers are known to the victim, but there are also those stalkers that see somebody and just decide that that's the person for them and become obsessed then and find out their name and find out everything after they already become obsessed, because Jody had never dated the guy that is accused of doing this. She wasn't friends with him, didn't know him, she hadn't rejected him. He just became obsessed and did continue to stalk her until it ended with the loss of her life. And that's the ultimate in the stalking cases. But it does lead to stronger crimes, especially once they do start to feel rejected and once they do start to feel like what they're doing is not getting the attention of the person anymore.
I think the worst terror would go along with never knowing that person, mm-hmm. never to have a letter sitting on your door. Did you have fun last night at the movies? And you don't know who it is, you know. And the rejection is the thing in domestic violence, in any case of stalking, that is the most lethal.
I would think that when the stalker is most manipulative, they try to twist it into compliments.
Carol?
Well, there's a cycle. They say that there's a cycle in stalking, or in some stalking cases, because everyone is unique. But they say that it can start off as a compliment, that it's the flowers and those love letters and gifts, and then especially if it's a stranger or something. But also, if the person who's being stalked rejects that, then there's the anger and the danger and the threats and the horrible email messages and the things like that. And then after that, oftentimes there's an apology period. I didn't mean it. You know, I didn't mean it. You know, we're meant to be together. This is divine. And a lot of times, once again, because stalkers tend to be mentally unbalanced, that they may think that, say, and this was something you and I were talking about earlier today, say a nurse is kind to someone in the hospital, which most nurses are really incredibly kind people. Someone who's mentally unstable and has stalking tendencies and maybe an obsessive personality interprets that kindness as we were meant to be together. That is true love. And she just may not recognize it, or she doesn't realize it yet. And that's why sometimes those people in helping professions can oftentimes become victims, because they're doing their job.
Now, there are other people who become victims, who are people like actresses, people who are on television, people who are very much visually in the public eye.
Yes, they do end up with a lot of stalkers. However, the statistic is that 1 in 7 women will be stalked sometime in their lifetime in the U.S.
Really?
In New Mexico, it's 1 in 4.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's even a stronger statistic in New Mexico. But those two statistics right there show you that it's not just an actress or an actor problem. It is everybody's problem. You know, that's affecting a lot of just the average people out here, too. I think that, like with domestic violence, the victims continue to doubt themselves often, you know, kind of like with domestic violence, that, you know, they often think, I must have deserved it. The victims think it's not really happening. He just happens to be here every time, you know. And I say he, but there are women stalkers,
yes,
too.
There are.
But 80% or more of stalkers are men.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And most of their victims are women.
And most of their victims are women.
Right. Now, it's also true that when men stalk men, the law enforcement and the criminal justice system take it more seriously.
Yeah, and that was something that was very interesting. It's from Betty Campanero's report on sexual assault in New Mexico. And what she found is that when men stalk other men, the courts generally are less likely to acquit and tend to provide longer sentences by 2 years. So what I interpret that is that the courts take men stalking men much more seriously than men stalking women, which is really just a matter of a broken heart or a guy who just won't let go, and it's not really a crime.
Or that in their minds, whereas what that really is just pure sexism.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I say something, Richard? One of the things that Sherry was talking about victims of domestic violence being stalked by their partners, ex-partners, or perpetrators, and that is that when there is a homicide, it's oftentimes associated with an intimate relationship, and that most homicide victims, female homicide victims, femicide victims, as they sometimes say, were stalked by their intimate partner before they were killed. So I think that's really, really significant.
Huge.
Huge.
But I think that's where, originally, when domestic violence programs started evolving and funding came from the government, more women were dying from domestic violence than anything else. That was the highest killer of women.
More than lung cancer.
Yeah.
And, oh my goodness.
At the time. And this was in the early 80s when funding started. And with that, I can't imagine that someone wasn't stalked previous to that. I mean, we're seeing it now. We know more.
It's like child abuse. Nobody talked about it up until a certain point, and then suddenly it became an epidemic, but it was always there.
Right. And I think domestic violence has been around forever. We've only had 30 years to really be looking at it and focusing on it. And you know, it's one of those things. It's going to take more time. It's going to take more community involvement, more community commitment. We're all going to have to stand up with stalking, with domestic violence, and with sexual violence, and say we're not putting up with this in our home. We're not putting up with this in our community, and we're not putting up with this in our country.
So if a woman has the sense that she is being stalked, what should she do? In other words, let's say somebody is sending her too many texts and she gets a funny feeling about it. I mean, you can't really call 911 and say, I have a funny feeling.
Okay. This is my recommendation. The first thing, first of all, trust your gut feelings, and I think we all said that.
Absolutely.
And I just learned yesterday that you have more receptors in your gut than you do in your brain. Some crazy statistic like
makes
that.
Sense.
So your gut feeling, that's really important information.
Yes. And there are some specialized ones in your gut called sleaze detectors.
I think it comes in a red flag form.
That's right.
But anyway, trust your gut feeling. Start documenting, write down, save every single thing. If you're getting text messages, don't delete them, save them. Tell your coworkers, tell your friends, tell your family members. It's hard to say to call law enforcement and say, well, I got a text message that said he really wants to kiss me. I mean, and as much as I love my law enforcement officers, they're going to look at that and go, okay, lady, you're crazy.
But that combined
with not only, so you're documenting. Then they're driving by. Your neighbors, not only you, but now your neighbors are involved. They're seeing that he's driving by. So you're documenting that. And then he's showing up at places, and you're starting to really feel fearful. That's when it's time to start getting an order, or I believe you should get an order for protection.
Even if you don't know who the person is.
Well,
let's say it's a stranger, like, let's say your poor friend Jody had noticed.
And actually, there have been almost 20 women come forward since Jody's death stating that he had assaulted them in some way or followed them too often. And not so much using the word stalking, but using the word following them all the time. And like I said, he'd been taken into custody earlier that same week for impersonating a police officer and released. But almost 20 women have come forward and since her death, but didn't come forward enough in time that had even one of them come forward, Jody might still be here today. And the paperwork was actually on the county attorney's office for three of those women. And they were unable to prosecute because of the way the law was written in Kansas at the time. And because it called for a certain course of conduct and a reasonable threat. A person had to feel a reasonable threat, which leaves it open to interpretation.
It
could be one thing for me could scare me to death, but it could not scare Carol.
Yeah, reasonable in the context of irrational intimidation is just
right.
Hard to, well, you were instrumental in having the Kansas law changed.
Right.
What did it change from to?
We got rid of the credible threat for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Increased some of the penalties, but the main thing was getting rid of that credible threat and including some cyber stalking issues in it as well.
And
I am not an attorney, so I'm not really the person to talk about the exact legalities
right.
of it. But I'm a marketing person, so I know how to get the word out. And that's what I've done, and we are working on it here in New Mexico now, and I'm also working in Colorado, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Tennessee, as I find somebody in each of those states that will take it on.
Very interesting. And so, basically, if somebody, under the law as it is now in Kansas, if somebody, a woman, whatever, says, there's somebody following me, there's somebody scaring me, what do they have to say in order to get action?
There has to be documentation there. So that they can see that the course of conduct is there, that, you know, I might go to the grocery store every day at 9 a.m. and every time he's there. You know, well, if I start to change that a little bit and he's still there every time, it's definitely stalking.
Right.
So that documentation is key to any stalking case. And it's key, you know, that really has to fall on the victim for the documentation.
Yeah, it's very unfair.
Yeah, because the police aren't going to respond and really take it seriously that you say you got one text message. You know, there's not really going to be much of a police report on that.
Now, we just recently had somebody on the air from Impact Personal Safety, and we were talking about self-defense, and a lot of self-defense, which is very successful, is verbal self-defense. You just nip it in the bud. You say, you know, I'm not comfortable with that, and I'm not going to handle that goodbye. And in a way that is meant to not escalate the confrontation. Do things like that work with stalkers at an early stage?
I would have no idea.
I can't answer
Sorry.
That. But
I think it's going to be dependent on the stalker. I mean, every case is very, very different as to why they're doing it and what their reasoning is and the relationship that has been there in the past. So it's going to be very different for each one.
And once again, you have to remember that stalkers have a mental imbalance. Mm-hmm. They're obsessive. And what I have read now is that you are supposed to say no one time and never respond again. Mm-hmm. So that is the best way to terminate, if you're going to be able to terminate.
Never respond again, but continue to document.
But right. And then the other thing I want to say is that a lot of stalkers, that's not their first victim, mm-hmm. as with Jody. That even if, and you were asked, if you don't know the person, that you're, you know, what do you do? And the thing is you still document, you still call law enforcement, you describe the person in the greatest detail possible, because there's a good chance that that person has stalked someone else, and they may know who that person is. They may have already a history on that person. So it is important.
And in any law enforcement agency, you can go and do an incident report. And as long as you can do as many incident reports as you need to. So they can keep that file with a case number on it as you go. You could, I'm not sure, what all kinds of evidence can you submit with that, Carol? I'm not sure.
In an incident report?
Yeah.
Like, well, you could submit, like, you could have your text messages or email messages,
right.
Or any kind of letters or gifts, or you can take photographs if someone has left a, you know, done something on your car. I mean, they'll document everything. They'll even, if someone out there thinks that they're being stalked, and as I'm looking around this restaurant, which is extremely, extremely full, I'm knowing that one out of four women here in this restaurant right now are probably either have been or will be victims of domestic violence and or stalking. So, right, you know, we're surrounded with it.
And one of the things that we encourage our clients to do in the domestic violence field is to keep a log for safety, and that might be something that you could use, too, if you suspect that someone's following you, whether it's someone you know or not. Every time you go somewhere, say you went out to eat and you see this person, and so after a few days, you could probably submit a copy of that log with a incident report as well.
Now, how well-trained, Carol, is law enforcement to recognize this, deal with it, and take it seriously?
Well, I think the training piece, I think, is will benefit from advanced training. I think the law enforcement will benefit from advanced training in stalking. I think a lot of times, once again, because people don't always interpret what's going on as stalking, they don't use those words, I'm being stalked, law enforcement will start documenting as harassment or something like that, a much, much lesser crime.
Mm-hmm.
Stalking actually is a felony.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it's considered a serious crime. But there has to be a documented history of events that would make a normal, this is the way the, I'm not going to say this exactly the way the law reads, but events, activities that would make a normal person fearful, uncomfortable, worried. And stalking, not only do stalkers affect victims, but they can also victimize their children, their pets, their parents, their cousins, their friends.
Co-workers.
Their co-workers. So it's not, you know, not just the victim is involved in these crimes. It's really a...
And I think it's important to note, too, that a victim who is aware that they are being stalked, it affects every portion of what they're doing, as I'm sure is true with the domestic violence as well. Their work performance suffers. They call in sick more often to work because they're trying to avoid their stalker. You know, so it affects business as a whole, too.
And living in fear is not good for anybody. It doesn't help anybody, including that person's children and family, as you say. There is town hall meeting I want to mention, and we'll mention this at the end, tomorrow night, Tuesday, the 13th of January, from 7 to 9 at the Santa Fe Rape Crisis Center and Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. What will be happening at that meeting?
Well, we're going to be having, it's going to be a community conversation, which is what a town hall meeting is supposed to be. But we're going to have our law enforcement officers, there are going to be some survivors of stalking, there are going to be some therapists talk about the impact of stalking on victims, and other interested community members and legislators. And we'll all be having a conversation. People will have an opportunity we'll have a panel, and they'll have an opportunity to speak for a minute or two about what they see as the issues surrounding stalking. Jim Williams is going to be moderating from
KUNM.
Yes, your competition.
Sorry. No, not our competition, our cooperative.
Cooperative.
Friends,
yeah,
and friends. In the same business.
Right. And so it's going to be, I think what's happened with stalking is that it's really slipped through the cracks in our consciousness. And it's a precursor to really horrible, horrible things.
Well, it's something that people joke about, too.
Right.
I mean, they say, oh, my stalker, like it's a joke. And and that might not be a true stalker, but I think the most important thing, too, to remember is that it's not a joke. It's never something that should be joked about. You don't hear people joke about the child abuse and domestic violence, and this isn't a joke either, because it can end just as horribly as those can.
I think it's also important to point out how often it does end in violence or death of the victim.
Right, and they say like 44% of victims of stalking end up with an injury. Many stalkers, victims are sexually assaulted as well as physically assaulted. And I don't have that statistic right in front of me. But the interesting thing, and this is not unlike domestic and sexual violence, is that they don't, victims do not report. It's like 25%, less than a quarter of victims report.
Now, what's going on with that?
They think it's normal. They think it's just them. They think it's not really that big a deal. He'll get over it.
So they think
type attitude.
Okay, so there's a couple of things there. One is they think it'll just go away, or it's not that big a deal. But you also said they think it's them. In other words, do they think they're bringing it on?
I think in some cases they do. Just like with domestic violence, has that problem too.
I agree. But I think with stalking too, is a lot of people don't know it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
That would make a higher
or
number.
Or happening as to the extent that it is.
But they don't recognize those kind of behaviors as stalking behaviors.
Right.
So that's why this town hall meeting is really important, because we have to start talking about it. We have to get some consciousness around it, and we have to bring the community on board.
Awareness in general. My feelings are it should be taught in the schools, that this sign should be taught in the schools right along with sexual education.
You know, I think there's a broader issue that speaks to this, which is that the history of sexism in the world, in the United States, it's still with us, but legally, it's very recent that a woman did not actually legally have control over her own property, over her own children. And so the institutionalized sense that a man, even, they don't even have their own name, you know, they give up their name when they marry, and lots of people still do that, but I mean, it harks back to a time when they were owned.
Or control of their own body.
Right.
They didn't own their own bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been going on for thousands of years that way. And I think a lot of times, even if you're totally aware of change and of fairness and of equality, there are these little things that will seep in there. And I think sometimes when courts aren't identifying things or law enforcement isn't identifying really what it is, I think it's just truly that we need more education. We need to be talking about it more like the town hall meeting. Socially, as a country, we need to know what these things look like and be aware of them. And I think people would be a lot safer. And I really agree that it should be taught in the schools. And I think healthy dating relationships, healthy relationships in general, should absolutely be taught at a very, very early age. And if we don't practice these things, and if we don't teach our kids, and if we don't hold communities responsible for making a phone call when they know that violence is happening next door, if we aren't all aware and taking responsibility for our world, it's going to just take a lot longer for us to get past this.
I'm glad you mentioned that about the schools, because what they're finding is that stalking occurs with adolescents a lot.
Yes.
It's just like dating violence is one in four, just like with adult victims of domestic violence, dating violence is up there. That's 25%. And the text messaging and the email messages and all those things that young people are so much better at than we are, it's stalking. It is stalking.
And college women are one of the biggest victims. Right. Groups right now
right.
for stalking.
Right.
Yeah.
Or
right.
Is it usually other college students or people outside of the college?
I don't know that they've actually identified that in the studies, but it's just, I think it has to do with getting away from home for the first time and being focused more on college and having fun than what's going on around you.
Right.
I think there's also, in terms of media images, there's romanticized images of courtship in which the man pursues the woman
exactly.
very strongly, and she says, no, 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 yes. And, you know, that's not stalking necessarily, but, you know, you're somehow in some kind of continuum that can look really ugly on the other side.
To somebody that is mentally.
Blend. Yeah.
And that's where the gut feelings come in. That's where the gut, that's where you learn what are the red flags in a relationship. And I have to put in a plug here, because the colleges in Santa Fe are all coming together, IAIA and Santa Fe Community College and the College of Santa Fe and St. John's are all joining forces to create a consortium against violence on college campuses. And it's really exciting. It's the first time anything like that has happened. And these are the things that we're going to be talking about. And one of the things that it was a nurse practitioner at St. John's said, well, it's a very, very small campus. There's a lot more men than there are women.
At St. John's.
It's extremely difficult if something bad happens in a relationship. You cannot get away from that person because they're right there on campus. You see them every day. So there's a lot of confounding factors, especially on a small college campus. Now, at the community college, they were talking about having strangers coming in on campus and doing not good things in women's restrooms and things like that. And I think that was in the newspaper or in the somewhere not too long ago. So it is happening everywhere, and we really, we have to say no.
There is, on January 27th, training for law enforcement and anyone else who's interested from noon to 5 at the Law Enforcement Academy on Cerrillos Road. What will be happening there?
Okay, Sandy Bromley, who is from the Stalking Resource Center and now lives in New Mexico and is the head of the New Mexico Homicide Review Team, and she's an attorney, is going to be co-facilitating with Anthony Mays, who was with the Albuquerque Police Department. And they're going to be training specifically law enforcement, but it's really for anybody who's interested, recognizing the signs of stalking, knowing what to do, knowing how to talk to victims of stalking, how to gather evidence, how to collect evidence, what are the dangers associated with stalking. And this is the first time we've done this, and it's going to be at the Law Enforcement Academy, which is actually behind the state police Department of Public Safety on Jaguar.
Cerrillos Road near Jaguar.
Right, exactly.
So that's another thing that's happening. Is there anything coming up in the upcoming legislative session?
There is a bill that's improving and strengthening the stalking legislation, and I'm not going to read it to you, but
good.
One of the things is the changes that it's going to, any pattern of conduct that would cause a reasonable person to fear for their personal safety, as I mentioned, or the safety of a household member. And a second conviction of stalking is a fourth-degree felony. So it is being taken more seriously, and we just have to get our law enforcement officers to recognize, no, this is not harassment, this is a pattern, and it's dangerous, and it's unacceptable, and we will not have it in our town.
I'd like to say something really fast. In the last year, we've had an Everyday Intervention for Everyday People campaign. And that means people in the community are making phone calls to law enforcement if they think there's a problem, if they think someone's in danger. And those calls have increased 53% over the last year. Is that correct, Carol? Something like that. And I think with stalking, it's the same way. If you feel like someone around you is unsafe, I think you can make those calls. I think you can protect each other. I think that's what a community does.
Yes, definitely.
I do know a case in which there was somebody who was, you could call, you know, I don't even know how it ended up being defined, stalking or harassing a lot of different women. And they finally all came together and really let everybody know about this person. And I noticed in my own response to it, I thought, oh, he's not that bad. You know, he seems like a nice guy. And I think that there's a real, it's very, very important to, when a couple of women tell you this person is trouble, to believe them more than you
exactly.
believe your own eyes, because anybody, including a serial killer, can be very charming and very gentle at moments.
It's like the domestic violence
perpetrators
and perpetrators.
Mm-hmm. And
the perpetrator might be a very nice guy at work with his friends, but he goes home and
volunteers in the community.
Mm-hmm. Is a
great
faith
dad.
Leader or yeah. preacher.
Anything mm-hmm. like that. They work very hard often at looking very good mm-hmm. so that people aren't going to ever even suspect, no matter what someone else says. And that's part of the power and control over it, too. No one's going to believe you. You know, you sit here all day and eat bonbons, and I'm out there taking care of the community.
Right. And people, and I hate to say it, people believe men more than they believe women a lot of the time. As any of us
right.
who's ever sat in a meeting can attest to.
And I heard from a victim recently that is the victim of a police officer, not in New Mexico, but another state. And he's her stalker. He can go arrest the other stalkers all day, but he's stalking her.
Not only that, but he's carrying a gun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just carrying a weapon.
January is Stalking Awareness Month, ladies and gentlemen, and we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, and one thing we haven't really talked about, and I know none of the three of you is a professional psychologist, but what is the profile, or what are some of the profiles of people who actually do this? Where are they coming from? Who are they? What are they? Why are they like this?
I think they come from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think they're unidentifiable.
But it does say, I mean, some of the things that I've read say that they do tend to be loners, they do tend to have lower self-esteem, they do tend to be delusional, so that they're able to interpret a smile from a stranger as a come on. They do tend to be obsessive. Sometimes they tend to fixate on people in positions of power, like a movie star or, you know, a mayor or, a leader, community leader, something like that. So they do tend to have some, oftentimes they've had abuse in their own lives and abuse in their childhood. So not to make an excuse for them, but, there's some of the things that I've read point to that. Then there are the extenuating circumstances when domestic violence, when a relationship is breaking up and someone is losing power over someone else. And that is a power and control issue. They can have all those same problems. They can have all those same, many of those same problems. But that's kind of its own unique brand of stalking, I think, is the intimate partner stalking or the ex-intimate partner stalking.
And it can come in spurts, too. It can be really bad for a while and then seem to go away mm-hmm. just to start back up again.
Right.
And I think a lot of stalkers think they're having a relationship with these people. Mm-hmm. So even though they're not, it very much comes back to some type of power and control over this other person.
So. And it sounds like they've just got nothing else to do. So in their minds, they are having a relationship with that person.
Right. Mm-hmm. And some stalking cases can go on for years. I mean, as I was reading through the research, it's not unusual for a stalker to spend at least 2 years stalking.
Most of the people I've heard from hearing from the victims have been 5 years or more. Yeah. Now, those are the people that are willing to reach out to me. You know, they've dealt with it forever and are comfortable with reaching out to people. So I'm probably hearing from the longer-term ones. But. Right.
And then the number of stalking events, that can be as much as every single day to every couple of hours to once a month to... You know, it's very unpredictable, mm-hmm. and that's part of the terror, I think, of it, because you
never know when you're going to turn the corner to see them.
Right. What are the scenarios in which you have a female stalker?
I've talked to a lot of women that have female stalkers. I talk to someone very often that's fairly high-profile actress that has a female stalker that used to be her assistant.
Heavens.
And just, it's been going on for years, and it's just never gone away.
And she can't take measures.
She has restraining orders. The woman has gone to jail several times, but knows the system enough to know how far she can push it to stay out of jail or out of prison.
And stalkers don't respect restraining orders. Mm-mm. I mean, that's like nothing
right.
to them, because once again, yeah. these are people with obsessive problems, and they don't a restraining order, an order for protection, that means nothing to them. A lot of times they feel like, well, they're in a relationship, they own this person in a way, and mm-hmm. what is this piece of paper? That doesn't mean anything.
I heard from her the other day, and she was granted a conceal and carry permit, which I can't blame her at all for wanting to receive at this point, but I have no doubt that I'll either get a call from her or see on the news that it was either her or her stalker. It will come down to that in that case.
That one of them will get shot?
Yeah. It will come down, because she'll be forced to make the decision, I have no doubt, based on the stories that she's told me.
What if a stalker, a stalkee, shoots their stalker? Do they then end up serving jail time?
I suppose they could.
They could. And that would be up to each jury,
mm-hmm.
you know, or court system.
Well, all of this is extremely important, and if people want more information, they can go to the town hall meeting from 7 to 9 tomorrow, Tuesday, January 13th, at the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. What is the telephone number over there where people can get more information?
Well, they can call a Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. That's 988-1951, or they can call me, Carol Horwitz, at 955-5018.
Or they could call Esperanza Shelter. You could call and talk to me, ask for Sherry, and it is
474-5536 is the number at Esperanza. Tell us, just, we've got a couple of minutes left, tell us about Esperanza and what you do over there.
Esperanza has several different programs. We have a 42-bed space shelter that we provide services, counseling services in English and Spanish, case management in English and Spanish. We have a children's advocate and child counselor. All those are housed within the shelter itself. Then on the other side, we have a non-residential counseling services that provide services to victims of domestic violence, children, and also we have a full offender program. It's a 52-week program for court-ordered offenders. With that, all of our services are free except for the offender program, but if you feel like you're losing control and don't really know what to do, give us a call. It's free. The counselors are wonderful, and we can provide that help for free, and maybe you can save your family and your relationship and maybe not go to violence or stop it. Don't hesitate to call us. Everything's confidential.
And once again, on Tuesday, January 27th, the Santa Fe Coordinated Community Response Council is doing a training for law enforcement and anyone else who's interested in participating in that from noon to 5, and you can call Carol Horwitz at 955-5018. Carol Horwitz is the domestic and social sexual violence liaison for the city of Santa Fe. Sherry Taylor is executive director of Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families, and Angela Daffron is a community advocate. And I want to thank you all so very much for being with us all this time and talking about stalking here during January Stalking Awareness Month.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Brian Highhill for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day. Ciao.